duplicitous Christian, living a double life as a Christian. What I'd like to do is, I don't want to recover all the ground that we covered last week, but I would like to at least read the reading in case somebody wasn't here. Good morning, Ray. I'd like to reread the paragraphs that we read, and most of the discussion should come back to you. We'll briefly recap, and then we'll continue from there. Okay. If you want, we can split up the three paragraphs that we did last time and have three different people read them. All right.
My dear one brother, I was delighted to hear from Christian that your patient has made a very desirable new acquaintance and that you have been able to give this in a really promising manner. At that early, middle-aged married couple who called at his office were just the sort of people you want him to know. Rich, smart, superficially intellectual, rightly skeptical about everything in the world. Together they are even vaguely pacifists, not on moral grounds, but from an ingrained habit of belittling anything that concerns the great mass of fellow men of a dash of purely fashionable and literary communism. This is excellent, and you seem to have made good use of all his social, sexual, and intellectual advantages. Tell me more, did he commit himself deeply? I don't mean in words, there's a subtle play of words and tones, and the last of which a mortal can apply to give to the same party as those to whom he is speaking. That is the kind of betrayal you should specifically encourage, because the man does not fully realize it himself, and by the time he does, you will have made his role difficult.
Okay. Lynette, you want to just pick up from there? Okay.
No doubt he must very soon realize that his own faith is in direct opposition to the functions on which all the conversation of his youth and his faith. I don't think that matters much, provided that he can persuade him to postpone any open acknowledgement of the fact. And this, with the aid of shame, pride, modesty, and vanity, would be easy to do. As long as the postponement lasts, he would be in a false position. He will be silent when he ought to speak, and laugh when he ought to be silent. He will assume that first only by his manner, but presently by his words, all sorts of cynical and skeptical attitudes concern that very name. But if you play him well, they may become hurt. All mortals can discern into the thing they are continuing to do. This is a gentleman's duty. The real question is how to prepare for the enemy's counterattack.
Okay. And paragraph, label paragraph two, but the third paragraph.
The first thing is to delay as long as possible the moment at which he realizes this new pleasure as a temptation. Since the enemy's servants have been preaching about the world as one of the great standard temptations for 2,000 years, this might seem difficult to do. But fortunately, they have said very little about it for the last few decades. In modern Christian writings, though I see much, indeed more than I like, about mammon, I see few of the old warnings about worldly vanities, the choice of friends, and the value of time. All that your patient would probably classify as Puritanism. And may I remark in passing that the value we have given to that word is one of the really solid triumphs of the last 100 years. By it, we rescue annually thousands of humans from temperance, chastity, and sobriety of life.
Okay, in the first two paragraphs last time, we talked about friends. We talked about in this specific example, the friends, the new friends that this individual had chosen, and why these new friends weren't a positive influence on this individual as a Christian. He said they were, they kind of had the sound of the haughty, kind of stuck-up friends that were considered themselves too good for things like religion and church, and considered themselves above that, or maybe that they had evolved beyond the need for those types of old-fashioned beliefs. And so he had fallen in with this group, and what Screwtape is saying is, if you don't quickly identify yourself as not sharing those types of thoughts, then it becomes harder and harder at a later time to speak out against the things that these people have said. Apparently, these were people that he thought a lot of and respected, and so it made it difficult for him to initially say, no, I think you're wrong on what you're talking about. And the longer he delayed that, the harder it got, the harder it became. And so that's what Screwtape was encouraging here, was keep him silent whenever he should be speaking out. And when he should be saying something, instead just have him laugh along with what they're saying. And he says after a while, he'll not only be pretending to agree with these people, he'll actually start to agree with these people. So that was kind of the summary up to that point. And in paragraph 2, he starts to expand this a little bit and get into some strategy. And what he says is that Christians have in large part stopped talking about sort of the dangers of the world. And I like the way he put these things in capitals: worldly vanities, choice of friends, and the value of time. So this was written 70 years ago. In the 70 years since, do you think that that's changed, gotten worse, or gotten better? Do we talk about those things to the extent that perhaps they did years before? And what are these things? How would you sum up these things? Worldly vanities, choice of friends, and value of time. What's he implying? Okay, there is right and wrong. What else is he implying with these statements?
Accept it. Well, I don't agree with it, but it's their right to do this, you know, or whatever the case may be. Where we just kind of accepted that. It's not for me, but, you know, that's what they want to do, that's fine, you know, and then we have the kind of circumstances that we have today because of those things. You know, we don't want to offend our friends, people we hang around with, but we don't want to offend them. And our business is having to accept, you know, these lifestyles and so forth.
Would y'all agree with his statement that the more that you overlook these things and don't speak out and just accept them or nod and smile, that those attitudes gradually become yours? Notice that tolerance only seems to go one way.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say, it depends on what you're calling a tolerance, you know.
Right, well, in the liberal sense of the word, I guess. Yeah, if you don't accept people's moral relativism, then you're not accepted.
Maybe it's politically incorrect, and therefore no longer relevant. What about the idea of the word Puritan? Nobody wants to be called a Puritan. Who were the Puritans? Anybody remember? What's that?
Okay,
they were. what time in history were we thinking of?
Well, here at this haven, it was actually before the founding of our republic, colonial America. They actually deserve the greatest of that.
Okay. What were they known for?
Their lifestyle was marked by very, very harsh treatment and violence. They were kind of like the opposite of the Gnostics, you know, who made their Christianity intellectual. And it didn't really matter what you did in the flesh, you know, as long as they were assimilated to. But Puritans kind of had the reputation of being the flip side of that. You know, the more I beat myself with a whip and the more suffering I endure and actually can set myself up for, on this earth, you know, that will gain me points for heaven. It's kind of a historical reputation.
Did they have a reputation for tolerance? Or?
No.
Okay. So since Puritan is a word almost universally used with a negative connotation, we never hear it used as a positive description of anybody, then it becomes an effort on our part to not want to be painted with that brush. So, refer to puritanical beliefs and things anytime they want to belittle whatever it is your opinion is.
Much of our perception of other people comes from one outlet, which we all read in school if you're of a certain age, the Scarlet Letter. You know, that novel was written, about the Puritan, the hypocrisy, of course, that the author saw in the way they handled our moral depravity, which is pretty much incredible.
Only the female was the one that was chastised in the book. Okay. All right. Somebody read paragraph 3 for us. Okay.
Sooner or later, however, the real nature of his new friends must become clear to him, and then your tactics must depend on the patient's intelligence. If he is a big enough fool, he can get him to realize the character of his friends only while they are absent. Their presence can be made to sweep away all criticism. If this succeeds, he can be induced to live, as I have known many humans live, for quite long periods, two parallel lives. He will not only appear to be, but actually be, a different man in each of the circles of existence.
Okay. This is interesting. This is the kind of thing we say, well, that could never happen to me. But you can kind of envision how this develops, that you come to church and you say all the right things and you give all the right answers and everything, and then you get with your secular friends during the week and you become indistinguishable from your secular friends. And he says this starts out to be kind of an act, and after a while it's no longer an act. You're actually two different people at these different times. What do you think of that? You've seen that to be the case, or do you disagree with that?
The human capacity to hold two totally contradictory ideas in our heads at the same time is astounding, but we can do that. And convince ourselves that everything's fine.
One of the first times that this becomes prevalent, and maybe this is what ingrains it into us, is whenever children go to Sunday school and they read Genesis, and then they go to school and they take science class, and they can equally give the correct answers to the questions in either of those learning environments, and at times perhaps not even notice the conflict that may exist between the two in the way that they're presented. I'm not saying that the two are necessarily opposed to one another, but often the way they are presented are in direct opposition to one another. Okay. But I think this may be the beginning point at which we develop the ability to do these two things. And our brain seems to seamlessly switch over from one mode to the other when we're in a situation. Yeah.
I think that there's a warning sign, so to speak, that can often shake us up, is that if we're in our work environment or the friends that we hang around with, people that we socialize with when we're not at church, if they were to find out that we were Christian, we'd be surprised with that, and that ought to tell us something.
Yeah, I said, in fact, last week, I think that one of the worst criticisms you can receive is, oh, I had no idea you were a Christian. But, yeah, and the way I put it in the teen class is, do you find yourself hiding your other life from these groups? Do you hide the fact you're a Christian from your friends during the week? And do you hide the friends that you have during the week from your Christian friends?
Yeah, I think that we have to look at sometimes where the motivation is for that. You know, people do it all the time, but sometimes there's a motivation of fear. You know, if these people know that I go to church, they'll make fun of me. If these people know the people that I hang out with, then, you know, they'll give me a hard time at church. Sometimes, though, the motivation is I just want to be able to, on one side, feel secure that I'm, you know, going to go to heaven, so to speak, but at the same time, I can enjoy life the way I want to. And so we have, you know, our secular life and our Christian, you know, church life, and there the twain shall meet, you know, kind of a thing, because we want to try to enjoy the best of both worlds. And so the motivation sometimes is we have to look at that. What's allowing people to do that?
And to be fair, we have no choice but to live in the world. Jesus acknowledged that for his disciples, that when he was praying, he said, you know, it's not that I want to take them out of the world. That's where they belong. That's where their mission is. But you shouldn't be of the world. And so that's the distinction that he drew. We have to live in the world. We're supposed to live in the world. We have a mission out in the world. So the fact that we have worldly friends is not a problem. It's the way that we react with them is what's important. So that's the key to whether we're on Screwtape's side or not. Are we leading this duplicitous lifestyle? So, yes.
Successful Satan has been, you know, in this particular tactic, you know, amongst those who call themselves Christians in the world of Christianity, and I, you know, my son-in-law, I use him as a perfect example. You know, he's a good guy, you know, and all this, but you know, when Katie and Steve first got married, and you know, we're getting to know Steve a lot and all this, and he's getting to know us. You know, he made a comment one time saying, you know, about church, and he was, you know, he used to go to church and all this stuff. But his comment was, he's raised as a Methodist, as you know, and so forth. He said, you know, I've never known anybody that really takes that seriously to try to live the way the Bible teaches. You know, that's just not something that people out there are teaching, that's what you expected of you to do, you know.
yeah, it's good information, and I try to be a good person, but to actually live the way this tells me to live, you know, that's foreign to a lot of people that are religious folks. And I think we have to be sensitive to that and be aware of that.
Because that's what letter number 9 was about, was the idea of, you know, everything is good in moderation, to include your Christianity. You don't want to overdo it as a Christian. So we'll just put that in its proper place in life, and which is, you know, an hour on Sunday.
Don't become dramatic.
Right, exactly.
I hope this isn't problematic for everybody else. Through my life, I've spent most of my, you know, contemplation. You know, it's just like, okay, where do I draw the line? You know, when do I, you know, create that mental bell? Because at this point, I've got to open my mouth and risk the friendship. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a hard thing to do, to be, you know, in the world but not of the world. You know, you look back in history and it's, you know, you have Christian-minded people that, you know, their whole goal was to, you know, pull themselves out of the world and live kind of a monastic life, you know, just so they wouldn't be polluted. And, of course, that rendered them ineffective, you know, in the Christian mission. At the same time, you know, if you look at Christ and the fact that the people around him, the religious leaders of the day, regularly criticized him for the company he kept. You know, and I sometimes do wonder, you know, if he were among us today and we didn't know who he was, if we wouldn't have that same attitude.
It's a tough balance.
Yeah, and it really is.
If you lay down with dogs, you're going to get the fleas.
It's a real tight rope,
and so
you know.
You have to be able to know what your limits are, because if you get too deep into the world, then you start to drown. And so you've got to strike the balance of getting just deep enough to be interfacing with the people who need your influence, but not rationalizing that's what I'm doing, when actually I'm just going out to enjoy the worldly pleasures that they're enjoying. Anyway, what is it that's motivating you to go and have a beer with the friends on Friday after work? Is it the chance to talk to them and get into a religious discussion, or is it because it sounds like a good excuse to go and have the beer after work on Friday? And that's the difficult line. We have to constantly check to see which side we're on. Okay. The next paragraph, he's going to take this to another level. We could have somebody read paragraph 4.
Failing this, there is a certain and more entertaining method. Keeping the maid taken on to the grave in the perception that the two sides of his life are inconsistent. That is done by the strong man. He can retort to enjoy the many sides of grocery on some deadly part of his memory that grocery could not possibly understand the erections and mocking of the world with either pamphlet or satire. And pamphlet temporized to enjoy the glory and blasphemy over the coffee that was happening to him all the more because he was aware of the deepest spirit of the world that they did not understand. You see the idea, the world of the instruction on one side, and the grocer on the other side, on the other. And he was a complete, balanced, complex man who truly learned them all. Thus, while they come to his prejudice, to reach two sets of people, he would do it. They are trained. They were capable of undergoing a self-satisfaction. Finally, if all else fails, you can persuade them in the fires of conscience to continue the real point in the grand fact he is, in some unspecified way, when these people feel that the mere fact of taking their popular and natural of their choice does in that you choose to do so with you.
Okay, so he says, after a while of leading these two separate lives, he becomes not only accepting of this idea, but begins to enjoy the idea that he leads two separate lives. Kind of like you're thinking in church, if they could have only seen me last night on Saturday night, you know, with the lampshade on my head at the party. But then you're also thinking when you're with the friends on Saturday night, you know, if they could only see me in church, you know, serving the Lord's Supper, what would they think? And so he gets to the point where he's thinking he's more intellectually evolved than either of these groups. So the person that learns to enjoy that that sense of opposite in their life, the duplicity, they begin to think, well, I'm way smarter than all these people I hang around with on Saturday night because I know the deeper spiritual truth. And you think, well, I'm way more evolved than these simple people that go to church on Sunday because I can go out and do those things and still be a Christian. Yeah.
We were in double life in James and pain because, first of all, that's exactly what the devil wants you to do. He wants you to be comfortable in doing those things around people that normally don't see you at church. And then you want to come to church and act like you're holding your doubt. That's David's commentary because of the fact that you either going to serve one master and hate the other, or you're going to serve the other master and hate that other one. You either going to serve the Lord or you're going to serve the devil. You can't serve both. It's just like now, after in Revelation, lukewarm Christian. You know, these individuals who hot or cold.
I was waiting for the right time to introduce that verse, but this is the right time. So eventually it catches up with you.
Okay.
All right. So we do have to live in the world and have worldly friends. What are the things that should start ringing the bell in our life of that maybe we're crossing the line, maybe we're getting in too deep? What is it that should be alerting us to that fact?
I'd like to go because I enjoy the company of most of the ladies, but there's that too.
bothers me more than anything is when a Christian speaks down on another Christian. I think, you know, well, when I say this brother here or this Christian sees this and that, I mean, I say, have you discussed this with him or him? You know, what I like to do is put it ball in their court. Because, you know, I don't like for you to be talking about somebody around me and they're not there to defend themselves. So I think we need to make sure we stand up and be counted and make sure that person realizes that this is not the right thing to do. The Lord wants us to do things in a decent and right manner. I'm talking about Christians. And we need to make sure that we do that. And that's not bad. Oh, really? You know? No. No, I haven't heard anything like that. Have you talked to this person about these things? And I think that's the way it ought to be. And yeah, as far as making those folks in the world uncomfortable, keep on doing it. That was never the way you stand. You stand for the law. Sometimes they know that certain things, you know, they're not going to deal with you. You know, that's a good thing.
It's not just your opinion that that's the right way to handle it. That's what the Bible says that we should do whenever we think somebody is in sin, that we don't gossip about them to other people, that we go and approach them and get straight information. Because most of the time what we discover is that we had bad information or incomplete information to begin with. We draw a conclusion based on some things that we see or hear, which is a lot of times way off the mark.
Yep.
And we'll find out what the truth is. Sometimes what we've seen in congregations is that the most legalistic and, if you want, puritanical Christians are some of the ones that have some of these same difficulties with their double lives. Sometimes you see other things in their life that is that looks like it's not in accordance with God's word, even though they want to be very strictly judging other people in the church. So I'm not sure if there's any kind of a cause and effect relationship there, but some of the things that we've seen. Okay. If somebody can read the last paragraph there, number 5.
Meanwhile, the world still takes the obvious precaution of stating that with new development, the religious ministry spend more than 2.4 chances or less, they work and for less. So jealousy and alarm and hate increasing invasiveness and all willingness to combat this with the aggravation of the ministry.
Yeah. All right. Kind of a throwback to the very first letter. Whenever it mentioned the problems that he had at home with his mother. So it says, you know, be sure you encourage him to do other things that are going to set off her alarm bells. You know, you're spending way too much on the wrong things and spending your time where it shouldn't be spent. I've heard it said that if you want to know where your priorities are in life, where do you spend your time and your money? If you look at where your time and your money goes, that's your priority. Sometimes that's very enlightening when we look at it that way and we think about it and say, really? Is that what's important to me? Kind of a surprising revelation sometimes. Walmart's a real high priority to me then. I've been considering having an allotment from my check just being sent there.
Prepaid.
Yeah, really. Okay. All right. What do you think about this letter? Was this one on target or was it outdated from 70 years ago? Actually, I've been surprised at how little that he's had in these first 10 letters has been outdated in the last 70 years. If anything, the points that he makes are more true than they were in 1941. And a lot of the problems that we think are modern problems. So, you know, well, you know, kids today, you know, that we see them that were being written about in 1941, two generations earlier. In many cases, you know, this was our parents or grandparents that were living about the times whenever these letters were being written. But they still had the same exact problems that we had today. Solomon always says there's nothing new under the sun. Okay. In the next lesson, he's going to transition from this into the idea of humor. Some of his comments about humor may surprise you. Some of the things that, from Satan's point of view, are the positive aspects of humor. You may be surprised at which types of humor he finds the easiest to pull people away from God. It's not necessarily the dirty joke. So, anyway, looking forward to going over that one with you. Can we have somebody lead us in prayer? Somehow it just keeps on hanging in there, doesn't it? And that's actually the farther we go and the more that science discovers, in many cases, the more true we actually figure out that it is when we correctly interpret it. A lot of the things that people criticize about it are things that aren't being correctly interpreted. We find that it does tend to agree with what we learn. I don't care. Why don't you lead us in prayer?
Gather and keep us in your care. Bless those who are unable to be here, those who are unable to. This is my prayer we ask.